Ready?
Ready.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You're positive?
Positive.
You're ready to do it?
No, now I'm not sure.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAY to win 5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we are talking about our, I guess, favorite cards in CDH right now, or just cards that we're super interested in CDH right now.
The top 10 cards that we want to talk about in CEDH right now.
Perfect. I love it. Yeah. I have 5 cards. You have 5 cards. There's probably going to be some other cards we'll talk about.
But we just brought 5 cards each to talk about, and we're each going to figure out what's in each player's hands.
And as we talk about them, we'll be discussing the things about them.
And probably rank them.
Good. Now that everyone understands, like, fully, really, what we're doing
here. All right.
Do you want to start us off? Do you want to bring your first card to the table? We can start talking about it.
The first card I'm going to put on the stack is... I know, we're going to be that kind of cringy, lame.
No, podcast. I love it. I love it.
Orcish Lumberjack.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Orcish Lumberjack is a 1 red for a 1/1 creature orc that taps and sacrifices a forest to add 3 mana in any combination of red and or green to your mana pool. So this card has been a favorite of mine for a while, but it's recently become even more of a favorite of mine in blitzing fast decks like Atali and like this Jund Adnaz Rograk deck that I was playing. There's a lot of times where it really helps you get ad nauseum off super early. As long as you have a way that you can make like black, like you have like Badlands by you.
It only makes red or green.
Correct.
But you get to choose which amount of which type.
Which is pretty nuts.
That's like, pretty crazy.
It really helps you go off with like your dual caster line, because that's like one of my 2 win cons in that deck. So it really helps me fix my mana for that too. If I have like Bayou Overgrown Tomb, I still have a great way that I can get red mana. So I find myself like if I have a way to get that out early, like all of the other lands that I want are Bayou Overgrown Tomb so that I can make black mana and sacrifice them to the Lumberjack.
You're looking for a forest early so that you can sack it to the Lumberjack.
Exactly.
Have you come across situations where you don't have the forest? No, it doesn't do anything?
Yeah, I have. I have come across situations, specifically more in this Jund Rograk deck as opposed to Atali, because Atali got the luxury of being able to play Yavimaya, Cradle of Growth.
Yes, that is the name of it.
And that card just like... turns Orcish Lumberjack on in like a whole other level where like your mana confluence then that you have, you can sacrifice and be like, now I don't have to worry about that and I can focus more on my Treasonous Ogre instead. Yeah.
The needing a forest, have you thought about, and maybe this is on your list so you can just pass in this, the land, the new land. What's it called?
Tell me about it.
You know the one that I'm talking
about? Woodlands?
Shifting Woodlands. Ooh. Do you play that in the same deck? Because I feel like if you play Orcish Lumberjack, does that mean you can also play Shifting Woodlands? Because that card is great.
So I haven't put it in the Rograk deck quite yet. It was a card that I was playing in Atali.
Yeah.
I think I was, yeah.
To be honest, it's not even one that I wrote down today, but can we talk about it? Can we deviate and talk about that one real quick?
Talk about that one, yeah. Because Shifting Woodlands has been really good. It's not a forest, though.
It isn't a forest, but it requires you to have a forest.
It requires you to have a forest,
which is kind of the same as Orcish Bowmaster.
Yeah, so you just have to make sure that you don't sacrifice your forest before you put it down, and then...
Which I guess is kind of tricky, because you want to sacrifice the land early to make the mana as quickly as possible often.
I think Shifting Woodlands is really good, but you have to be kind of in the right deck that really wants green. Like, I feel like the Rograk decks... If you're playing Thrasios, then you really want green. Jund Rograk deck that I have wants green the least.
Shifting Woodlands, we should talk about real quick, is a land that says it enters the battlefield tapped unless you control a forest. It taps to add a green. And for Delirium, which means if you have 4 or more different card types amongst all cards in your graveyard, you can pay 2 mana, green, and Shifting Woodlands becomes a copy of target permanent card in your graveyard until end of turn. Activate only if there are 4 or more card types, and then it explains what Delirium is. I love that this card can become a copy of any permanent, and there's no timing restrictions. The powerful things about this card. I think that's really good. That you can have it become a copy of a big thing like a Hullbreaker Horror. That's really nice.
Yeah.
And just the fact that it's just more recursion in your deck that can also be a land. I'm just a big fan of this deck. If you're already playing forest stuff, like Orcish Lumberjack in particular.
Yeah, and I have thought about it because it can be a copy of not just Underworld Breach, but also Necropotence if that gets countered too.
Oh, yeah.
So it does seem like it has a lot of really good utility as just like a backup way to do something. If you're really heavy into forest is the thing. If you can actively get a forest into play and have this be your turn 2 card, I think to me that means I want to be playing a couple more lands in the deck. Like, I don't think I want it to be my 24th land. I think I would want it to replace place a spell in the deck, I guess.
Your 24th land. So you mean like this is more like if this is your 29th land, if you're that type of deck.
Yeah, if I'm that type of deck, yeah.
If you're the type of deck that's on like 24 lands.
Yeah, so I guess Ikra doesn't really want it.
Yeah, but if this is your 29th land, you're like on that type of deck, I think this is a great land for
you. Yeah, much better in that spot, I think. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, the fixing is super huge, I think. There's a couple cards like Eldritch Evolution if you're playing that, or...
Sorry.
Or like Dual Caster Mage, like you already mentioned, that getting the double red or double green can be relevant. So having the orc for that is super helpful. And just 3 mana for 1 mana is a really good rate, even if you do have to wait a turn for it.
It definitely is a huge boost that not many other cards are going to get you.
Feeds your Underworld Breach, 1 extra card. That's not nothing.
That's also very true too. Yeah. And if you have ways to get that card back from your graveyard as well, then that also is nice.
The only thing that I will have to say about this card is that I really only think it's good if you're playing fast decks. If you're playing slow decks, I don't know that it's great. I don't know that I like.
I don't think a slow deck wants to get rid of its lands that much.
In Timnatana, this isn't really the dwarf that I want. Unfortunately, in a lot of ways, it would be really good. And I am playing more ritual effects in that list than I used to. So maybe I should reevaluate, but I don't think so. I think I want to make sure that I continue hitting my land drops in that deck. So I don't think that it goes in every deck, but if you're trying to go fast, if you're trying to win on turn two, I think this is a great turn one mana dwarf.
Yeah, the only thing that makes me sad about it is that it doesn't fix my black mana at all. So like I still... That's why I keep emphasizing Bayou and Overgrown Tomb, because you really need those cards to help to actually make your mana 4 ad nauseum. I really wish that they did a whole cycle of these and had a black 1/1 that taps and sacrifices a forest to do either black or green.
Oh my god.
And then
that card would be so much better than this card. Just the fact that if it could, like, truly, if it could make triple black, card is immediately so much better, right?
Yeah, right?
I mean, it's still in the same ballpark, but it would be certainly much more playable.
Yeah, and then there should be a blue 1/1 that taps and sacrifices a forest to make either blue or green.
You can't
get blue
that much
power. And then a white 1/1
that
taps and sacrifices a forest to make white or green.
Isn't it so weird that I really do think that all of them would be super different power levels solely based on their colors and what their decks could do with it?
Oh, for sure. Right? What's the best one? Is the black one's the best one? I
think the black one's the best one because the extra heavy black spells are so powerful, more so than I think the other ones. Like, you can use that boost of mana so much better, I think. But the extra blue mana, that's kind of interesting. That one's a little bit trickier because I don't know about if blue mana specifically is great in extra bursts.
I feel like the blue one would be a little bit worse.
Yeah, but the white one I feel like would be super helpful. If like a creature deck could just like turbo out and get like more stuff in play, I think that like that's what like,
yeah, who
white
cares
really
about
helpful.
Losing your land because you're just like
you're gonna land tax
two power. Oh yeah,
like all the stuff that says like if you control less lands, like in white specifically, I think it would actually be much more breakable,
dude. In because land tax lets you find basics. It doesn't focus on just planes.
Yeah,
so you can go get 3 forests and make sure that you have 3 rituals every turn.
Can we talk about a card of mine that would help you make more black mana?
Yeah, let's do it.
Rain of Filth.
Whoa, that's a great way to make black mana. I love that
super
card.
Badass name, number one. Number two, I've really been liking this card a lot. Oftentimes in this deck, in Rog'Sai, the deck that I play the most right now, it's closer to just a Rite of Flame. It is for 1 mana, sacrifice both of my lands because we're on turn 2, and it makes 2 black mana, and I think that's honestly a good enough rate.
That's all it needs to do.
If I'm winning the game anyway, that's good for me. The 2 extra cards in the graveyard for Underworld Breach can be great, but I like the fact that it's a ritual that scales over time. So if I have a Rhystic Study or a Mystic Remora hand and I'm just kind of laying back a little bit, hitting my land drops on turn 5, this being a 1 mana way to make 5 mana and put 5 cards into the graveyard can actually make a huge difference. So I like rituals like this that like scale over time. I'm not positive if it's right or if it's the best optimal card right now. I'm still trying it out, but for me, Rain of Filth is one that I've been super interested in. So far, I've liked it a lot.
I really liked it too. Did you say that it fuels your Underworld Breach?
I did mention that, yeah, once or twice.
It's so great at every stage of the game,
yeah.
Unless you get stopped. And then it's really hard.
It's bad on turn one.
It
doesn't help the turn one wins, usually.
No, but it does help you win the game very well on turn two. Really helps you power out like your ad nauseum on turn two very nicely. And it only gets better as the game goes on.
Yeah, obviously the issue is you're sacrificing your land. So if you don't win the game, that sucks. That's going to be bad. Yeah, you're going to have to choose your moments where like maybe this isn't the one where you just like use the Rain of Filth to jam out Rhystic Study. Don't do that. You know what I mean? But when you have like, okay, you have double counter backup and an ad nauseum on somebody else's turn, maybe then's the time to do it. Or I guess realistically, you really want to kind of do it on your own turn so you can win right away. But if you have Born Upon the Winter, if you have a plan, I think that's when you use Reign of Filth. If you have a plan, there's a line, you say, I'm winning the game right now. Reign of Filth is the perfect ritual, I think.
The other day, I found a window to instant speed Adnaz off of a Reign of Filth on someone else's turn.
Yeah.
And that, I will say, did feel a little tough. I do kind of wish that I held it up for my turn and because I just kind of like risk that one other player drawing one extra card and having that be the counterspell for it. But I like the window to kind of reveal everything and go into my turn and just go land drop. I still have 3 mana to boost off of whatever else I get from the ad nauseum that I had.
I think your ad nauseum in particular was kind of bad. You had to go to 2 with a tapped mana vault in play and you still weren't able to find much. So I think that was a little bit of bad variance in particular.
I did flip.
Normally that nauseum is going to be better.
Yeah, I did flip the One Ring directly into Bolas of Citadel.
Yeah. So it's like right away. Here's 10.
I hit like every other 4 drop in the deck too,
all the wheels and stuff. I remember like looking over as it was like the first couple cards were kind of like hilariously high mana, and that happens sometimes, not often, but sometimes it does happen.
It's gonna happen, it's gonna come up. At least if I would have had Reign of Filth then on done the Adnaz on my turn, my land drop return would have been able to tap and then still sacrifice for another black mana then, so Reign of Filth would have gotten me an additional mana outside of just getting me ad nauseum, which might have actually helped me go over and win the game.
What's nice about Reign of Filth also is you can cast it in your, say you're turn 3 and you tap your one land for the Reign of Filth, tap another land for 1 black mana, sacrifice 2 of your lands for 3 total black mana to put Necropotence into play. Since you've already cast the Reign of Filth, your last remaining land can tap for, say, a blue mana and also sacrifice for black mana in your end step after you've drawn all your cards with Necropotence and cast your Born Upon the Wind.
Reign of Filth is worded specifically and until end of turn, lands you control gain, sacrifice this land, add black. So if you play a land, it doesn't have that ability.
No, yes, I know. So say I'm saying like already on turn 3, you've played your 3rd land drop. You cast Reign of Filth by tapping 1. Tap your other land for a mana, sacrifice it for a black mana, sack the land that you tap for Reign of Filth for black mana. You have 1 land remaining that was in play when you cast Reign of Filth. Cast the Necropotence. In your end step, after you've drawn all the cards with Necropotence, the Reign of Filth still has the ability, the 3rd land, so that you can tap it for, and sacrifice it. Tap it for blue, sacrifice for black to cast Born Upon the Wind, right?
Correct. Yeah, that you
great,
can
do. I did that the other day. Wonderful. Yeah. So on the fact that it enables that type of play of with 3 lands in play, Necropotence and hold up for Born Upon the Wind, I think that's a, like a relevant thing.
I just wanted to figure out exactly what that wording was because the timing does matter. You do have to make sure that you play your land and then cast Reign of Filth.
Yes, that is a big difference. Lands afterwards don't have the Reign of Filth ability.
But Reign of Filth is very powerful. I really like that ability to just like help you go even faster, especially when you don't have access to such fast person mana that Dockside and Mana Crypt can give you.
Yeah, I think, as a replacement to something like Mana Crypt, it's helpful. Yeah. What next would you like to talk about? Give me another card.
I'm going
to
bring up Valley Floodcaller.
Oh, yeah.
This is a cool card. This is 2 and a blue for a 2/2 creature otter wizard with flash. It says you may cast non-creature spells as though they had flash. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, birds, frogs, otters, and rats you control get +1/+1 until end of turn and you untap them. So the main reason why I wanted to talk about this is because I think there's still this unknown combo with Banishing Knack. I don't know how unknown it is anymore, but I think it should be more well known that this is something that you can make infinite mana with this card Banishing Knack and one of your 1 mana or 0 mana rocks that you can tap and generate more mana than their value is worth. Banishing Knack is a blue mana for an instant that gives a creature the ability to tap and return a non-land permanent to its owner's hand.
So something like a Soul Ring.
Or a Mana Vault.
Mana Vault, or Grim Monolith even. Something that taps for more mana than it costs.
Exactly. So you can generate an infinite amount of storm.
Every time you cast the spell, the otter will untap itself, which means you'll be able to tap it again to bounce the Soul Ring to your hand, recast the Soul Ring, which will untap the otter, because it's whenever you cast a non-creature, untap all otters, which it is, and it has the ability to tap again to bounce the Soul Ring after you've tapped it for mana. Boop,
boop. Exactly. Yeah. So your otter also gets infinitely large as well too.
Sure.
So if you have birds of prowess. Yeah, if you have birds of paradise, that also is getting infinitely large.
The issue is the otter or the birds or whatever has to have not be summoning sick. It has to be able to tap right away for mana.
Which is why it works nicely with Valley Floodcaller, because you can flash it in and then go to your turn and then Banishing Knack it and take it from there.
I like this card also not for that reason, but this is common knowledge, just the stuff with Necropotence, being able to win in your end step with Necropotence. components, like we kind of talked about already. It's super good at that too.
Yeah, it's busted at being able to do that. Yeah, and I'm finding that that is so much better than Final Fortune-ing or Last Chancing and going into that. Like, it's so much nicer to not have to...
You get all the cards still. You still have all of them.
You still have all of them. And it's so much nicer to not have to commit to only seven, not have to commit to only one final turn and like actually be able to present backup then too.
The only issue that I have with it is it's non-creatures, which means that you can't win with Thassa's Oracle. So you have to do Underworld Breach stuff. So that means if there's a Dothi Voidwalker, that means you have to take a little sidestep and find some interaction or something like that.
True,
there's just some, or find the Born Upon the Wind with the after, you know what I mean? And then cast that as well. So that's the only thing to like just kind of look out for with this card, I think, is that specifically non-creatures. You can't cast Burgi, non-creatures, right? So think about that.
Yeah, that's very true. But it's still incredibly powerful, something that I think you want to be able to do in most decks. And I think that infinite mana option does kind of work if you only want to play kind of like one quote unquote dead card. Because like at least you can use Banishing Knack on like your opponent's creatures and like politic them into tapping them to bounce someone else's creature.
Sure.
So that way like you can stop a combo with it that way too. It's just a little bit more niche. It's not necessarily as powerful as Chain of Vapor.
But it's another bounce spell.
Yeah, it can still act as another bounce spell. Yeah. You just might have to rely on yourself or your opponents a little bit more for it. There's technically no dead cards in that combo. It's just this three card infinite mana combo, basically.
I think that combo is really only great also if you are playing a commander that is an outlet. So like if you're playing Thrasios, basically, especially with Kenrith gone. I guess Kenrith isn't gone. It's still here, you know, just without Toxic Tartar. But you specifically want a commander that can do something with the infinite colorless mana, because that's going to be the easiest mana to get with this combo.
Yeah, I don't think you want to be relying on Walking Ballista being in your list having to tutor for that then too.
Should we rank the four cards we've talked about so far so we know where we're at?
Yeah, let's take a brief ranking pause. Ranking pause. So I think Orcish Lumberjack is the best card that we've talked about.
Really?
Orcish Lumberjack.
So what do we do now? Because I think Reign of Filth is the best card we've talked about so far.
Well, I have no biases in what I'm saying at all.
Seems like I might though, so
no.
Maybe.
Okay. What was the first, you said Reign of Filth, and what was the other card you said?
Reign of Filth we've talked about, and then the land, the Delirium Land.
But that wasn't one that was on your list though.
No, that's the only one we've talked about on my list so far.
Well, that we're not ranking stuff that wasn't on our list. We're talking about the top 10 cards that we want to talk about.
Okay, so then we
didn't want to talk about it. We were kind of forced to based on where the conversation went.
Okay, fair. What's the second card that you talked about that we just talked
Valley
about?
Valley Floodcaller. That's actually the best card.
That's the best card we're talking about.
Valley Floodcaller is the best card that we talked about.
I think that is probably a tier one strategy. I think a lot of blue farm decks play it, Rockside decks play it, but some of the best decks.
And you think Reign of Filth is better than Orcish Lumberjack?
I think Reign of Filth is better than Orcish Lumberjack. I think Reign of Filth scales better.
Yeah.
Orcish Bowmaster is better on turn two once you've cast it on turn
Orcish
one.
Orcish Bowmaster is better than all these cards, but Orcish Lumberjack.
Fuck, I'm gonna do that so much. God damn it.
Oh, we already did.
Reign of Filth adds 2 mana on turn 2 no matter what. Orcish Lumberjack only makes 3 mana if you cast it on turn 1 and then wait till turn 2.
That's true, yes.
Reign of Filth is an instant. You can pitch it to grief. No. Okay, no.
You can pitch this one to fury, though.
Yeah, that's maybe a little bit more.
Damn. Yeah. Well, all right, I'll give you that. I think Reign of Filth might actually outweigh Orcish Lumberjack. I think I'm just a little bit lumberjack pilled over here.
Yeah, fair enough. I have another card we can talk about if you want.
I guess we can talk about it. Yeah.
Are you done talking about your little card?
Yeah, just go. Okay. Just go.
The Jolly Balloon Man.
Oh, yes. Are you going to tell me about how good of a commander he is?
No. The Jolly Balloon Man is for one, a red and a white, a legendary creature, human clown with haste. Clown is such a cool creature type. With haste, it's a 1/4, and for one and tap, it has the ability to create a token that's a copy of another target creature you control, except it's a 1/1 red balloon creature in addition to its other colors and types, and has flying and haste. Very relevant. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step, activate only as a sorcery.
It's nice that you said it's a 1/4 and 4/1.
I said it's and 4/1?
And for one, and tap it.
That's fun to hear.
Yeah, I got confused for a second.
That's what the Jolly Balloon Man does, which is a crazy sentence to have to say as a Sisay pilot. I'll find the Jolly Balloon Man. That sounds creepy. Don't say that.
Yeah, really.
As a commander, I think this one is still probably playable. It's a little tough with that dockside for sure, but if you're committed, I think it still works. What I want to talk about is it in Sisay, which is another deck that I'm not sure still works. But if you're going to do Sisay, I think Jolly Balloon Man is a great place to be.
Really? Really?
This is another legendary that you can tutor up that makes hasty copies of stuff, which means it makes hasty copies of Bloom Tenders. And if you're going to win with Sissei, making a hasty Bloom Tender that can tap for 5 mana is going to probably be the way to do it, unless you're all in on the just a pile of good stuff and you're just also playing Jerevi, Gaia's Cradle, Emil, and Agatha Soul Cauldron. I don't know that I love that. That's so many cards. If I were to play Sissei, I would play the line that would revolve around getting a hasty activation of Bloom Tender or Fabor or Elder or Silvala with something like the Jolly Balloon Man or something like Tyvar, the black-green commander that can untap and give haste. Something like Saheeli Rai. Sorry. Something like Saheeli Rai that can make a copy that's an artifact that also has haste. Something like Aminatu that can flicker those things. Like, all of these things also kind of work together. Another one we've talked about before, Gigadrone Diada. That's not what it's called. You know what it's called?
I know what you mean, yeah.
That one I think is particularly great because if you have Sissei in play as well as your Bloom Tender in play, which means Bloom Tender taps for green-white, if you are able to make Grixis mana, you can tap those two for Grixis and to do a search. And as long as Sissei is big enough, which means it has to have a decent amount of plus, you can find the Gigadrone Diada, which will give you enough colors right there and give you a hasty copy of Bloom Tender. I don't know. I've been thinking a little bit more about Sissei. I'm still not sure. I think it's a little bit too slow for me to be interested. But if you're going to do Sissei, I think the Jolly Balloon Man is the route that I would go.
That's fair. Yeah, I think we're kind of figuring out that decks aren't completely dead. They're just a little bit slower right now. So it's certainly something that's viable. And I think that Jolly Balloon Man would help fill that void of where, like, you're a really quick Jeweled Lotus and Dockside wins. Dockside, really. Where, like, your Dockside wins would be.
Yeah, it's just another piece of the puzzle. Another hasty way for Bloom Tender, which is nice. That's why I want to talk about it. Realistically, it's probably the worst card of the cards we've spoken about today, but it's a card that I'm excited about seeing more, hopefully, in tournaments.
I think that it's definitely the worst card that we've talked about today in the smallest amount of applications. So
it's really only good in one deck that we're not even sure is good anymore.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. I want to talk about my next card.
Give it to me.
Yeah, cool. This is really cool because my card might mean that I win this podcast. All right. So my next card that I want to talk about is called Thassa's Oracle. Have you heard of it? I think I'm going to win the podcast because of this card.
You're talking about this one.
Yeah. So I don't know if you heard of this one. This is 2 blue for a Merfolk Wizard.
It actually is your card. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. When Thassa's Oracle enters the battlefield, look at the top X cards of your library where X is your devotion to blue.
I appreciate the honesty in you picking this one so much.
Of course. Yeah. Put up to one of them on top of your library and put the rest of them on the bottom in a random order. If X is greater than or equal to the number of cards in your library, you win the game.
Greater than or equal to.
Greater than or equal to, yes.
Such an important sentence.
So I talked about this a little bit on the previous podcast, but I was in a situation recently where I'm playing this Jund Rograk deck, and I'm winning the game on turn 2 with a dual caster mage line, and Tyler, the only blue player in the pod, passes. And I feel so good. I'm like, hell yeah, he wasn't prepared for this. And he passes to the second player, who's Magda, who's like, okay, what's the interaction point? And I went, what the fuck? Are you kidding me? And they galvanic blast my Magda, which was an awesome move. That's so cool that that's what Magda had to stop the turn 2 win. But you would never expect that out of the Magda player, right? Guess what card doesn't lose to Galvanic Blast?
That's his Oracle.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, this is, I feel like, a decision tree that most players will inevitably go down as a CDH player. It's like, what do I play? Should I play this? Should I play this? And eventually you get the decision to, why aren't you playing Thassa's Oracle? And the reason for why you're not has to be so good of a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not new information, but I think it's important to reiterate that Thassa's Oracle is still just the best thing you can do.
Yeah, it's been fun playing all these decks that, like, surround Rograk, Silas, but I feel like that's just kind of the direction that I want to be going in.
If you're going to go all in on that, you need a win condition that's difficult to interact with, right? And Thassa's Oracle is just hard to interact with. There are ways. There, besides blue, you counter spells, obviously. A lot of times Underworld Breach is involved, which is helpful against the counter spells. But there are things like Endurance. I don't think the Stifle effects are very good.
No.
The preventing the ETBs are very good. They're too specific. That's all they do. You need ways to stop what Rograk is doing before then, because by the time that the Rograk deck draws 30 cards, they're going to probably find a removal spell to get rid of the thing that's preventing ETBs, or just win with a different way, like with Brain Freeze or something like that. But I think counter spells are a good answer to Thassa's Oracle.
I think so too. Even like the Red Blast and Pyroblast, oh, I think are also good.
If you're playing red right now, I think you must play both of those cards. I think they're too strong.
Yeah, not only because they stop the interaction against you, but also because Thassa's Oracle is going to be something that comes up. And yeah, sure, like you're not stopping the Tainted Pact, right? You're not doing it in the most optimal way, but it's still a really good tool to make sure you don't lose to that card too.
And I really do think maybe we should be talking about the Red Blast, but like being able to destroy a Rhystic Study or a Mystic Remora, I think is like very, very relevant. If everyone is saying that everyone else's games are slowing down, being able to destroy those draw engines before they get too out of hand, I think is going to be a fine play.
Or even to counter them too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, obviously to counter them is great, but the fact that you can also destroy them afterwards, once you find it afterwards, I think that's helpful. Whereas a counter spell is, if you draw it afterwards into the Rhystic Study, you go, this fucking dispel sucks right now because there's a Rhystic Study in play. But at least with Red Blast, you go, all right, I got a target right here. I can destroy the Rhystic Study. I like that.
I do like that too.
What card did we originally bring up?
Thassa's Oracle.
Thassa's Oracle.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, you're right. You win this round. It's the strongest card we're going
to
talk about.
Well, as a card on its own, like,
sucks to draw.
It sucks to draw, right? Yeah. Like, it feels like when you look at your opening seven, you immediately go to six.
It is normally, if I'm mulliganing to five or six and Thassa's Oracle's in there, the Oracle's going right to the bottom. I'll find that when I need to, when I'm ready to win later. Unless I have a tutor. There are some worlds where I just, like, all I see is a bunch of mana, a tutor, and Thassa's Oracle, and I say, okay, we'll just go for this.
Yeah, I feel that.
But if you don't have a tutor and like that's not your game plan, honestly, it's a card that I put to the bottom a decent amount in mulligans.
That being said, it's better than Reign of Filth, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do we feel about it versus Valley Floodcaller?
So, better. I mean, right. There could be an argument that I would much rather see Valley Floodcaller more often, but Thassa's Oracle is, it's just the best thing.
Thassa's Oracle is more powerful.
Absolutely.
All right, cool.
While everyone's talking about AI replacing people, smart companies know the real opportunity is using AI to make their people better. Lattice is the HR platform where people and AI succeed together, helping every employee grow, every manager lead, and every company achieve greater success. Let's build a people-powered future. No regrets. Visit lattice.com/no regrets. That's LATTICE.com/no regrets.
Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, now tell me about your little weak, wimpy card over there.
My next one is Flare of Duplication.
Whoa, I was immediately incorrectly judging the type of card you were going to say.
This is one that impresses me more and more the more that I cast it.
Read it. I don't know what it does.
Flare of Duplication is for one and red, an instant that says you may sacrifice a non-token red creature rather than pay this card's mana cost, the spell's mana cost. Copy target, instant, or sorcery spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. On its face, it just seems like it's a copy spell. The fact that it can be done for free because Ragrak makes it absolutely busted. At first, I was like, okay, I cast Ad Nauseam and they cast Force of Will. I sacrifice Ragrak with my Flare. I copy their Force of Will, counter their Force of Will, and my Ad Nauseam resolves. But there's so much more. This happened recently in a game. They Flusterstorm my Ad Nauseam, okay? I cast Flare of Duplication. I make a copy of my Ad Nauseam on top of the Flusterstorms. Coming at my Ad Nauseam, I can still resolve the Ad Nauseam. There's some like dream situations where like my opponent casts a Demonic Tutor. Ah, me too. I get a Demonic Tutor. And that can be great. That also comes up a lot. But I think the fact that it can counter things like Beseech the Mirror, where you can just sacrifice one thing and find two things and cast them both, I think that's great. You have to do the copy and then the Beseech is really good. The fact that it can just copy Dark Ritual, cast Dark Ritual for zero more mana, sacrifice Ragrak. Now I have six mana instead of three. That's a very convenient number. There's another card on my list that we're going to talk about in a second that I've been liking a lot, Dark Petition. I don't want to leak too much into it, but when a card does two things, copying being the two things is really good. Jessica's Will is another one. Even if I sacrifice the Rograk, if it was out for the first one, Flare of Duplication will copy the entirety of the Jessica's Will. So if Rograk was out for the first one, I cast Jessica's Will, hold priority, cast Flare of Duplication, sacrificing the Rograk. That's six cards and however much mana two times. So that's really great also.
I really like the idea of being able to copy your tutor as well, like your demonic tutor specifically, and like go get two cards that you need, like either
Underworld Breach and Lion's Eye Diamond.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. That sets up like everything that you need right there. So yeah. I really like the utility that it has, because it can just be everything that you need.
Copying somebody else's ad nauseum. Obviously, like we can just like, I can go on and on and on about the different situations. There's so many fun things that I think this card does. I think it's so flexible. I think it's like my card of the year. It does so many things at such a powerful rate. And I don't know. It's just so fucking good.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of it. And I think that it's going to go pretty high on our list, I think.
I think it's better than Reign of Filth.
I think it's, is it better than Valley Floodcaller?
Me personally, I think yes. I think the ceiling is higher. But
I'm really high on it, so I might agree with you for that.
I think it's better than Valley Floodcaller. It just does more stuff on its own. Yeah. Valley Floodcaller needs other stuff to be going. And I mean, Flare does too, but if you're playing with Rograk, it's easy to have it. You know, someone just has to cast a spell.
Even outside of Rograk, like Magda can play it very well.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah, there's a lot of decks that can run like small creatures that if you're in red, like I think that's a really strong reason to be in the color right now.
Truly, it's one of the reasons that I'm still playing Ragavan in Rog'Sai is because like having an extra red creature to sacrifice. Yeah, not just non-token, not non-legendary. Non-token is very good. So I wonder if Skirk Prospector is better because of that.
Maybe. Skirk Prospector is worse now that you're not trying to like loop Dockside. Yeah, though. Like that was good when you can like sack Dockside and then reanimate Dockside.
That's Zoroark is still obviously a better card, but this one does a ton and I love it with all the cards that I mentioned already. That's my card for this round. Give me another card that you're thinking about a lot right now.
Rograk, Son of Rogah.
Nice. Okay, good call.
All right, this is a 0 mana, 0/1 legendary creature, Kobold Warrior. It has partner and first strike and menace and trample. And it says strength is relative.
The flavor text is so fucking
so cool. So good. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. This is the card that has been on both of our minds the most for the past weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it just what's to say that hasn't been said about this card already? It just allows so much fast strategies. If you're looking to go as fast as possible and what Commander has to offer, Rograk just facilitates those strategies so well.
Every color combination that it can be in, it can be super strong and super powerful and like allow you to do the busted things in that color combination.
We're kind of jaded because like there are still like Thrasios, Timna, Krum are all very strong parts of the metagame right now. But what do you think is like the strongest individual partner in Commander?
Oh, I would say Rograk is the strongest partner.
That's kind of where I think like what the card that brings most individual value to a deck, I feel like it's Rograk.
The Commander that unlocks all of the weirdest cards that make up the strongest deck in the format.
Yeah.
The fact that it makes Culling the Weak so good, I think, is what makes this Commander that powerful. Like, the fact that you can go Mox Amber immediately on turn one and have that be a Mox Ruby. That is what that card is in that deck. You get to play Mox Ruby.
Something that we've talked about a little bit, but I'm not sure if we talked about on a podcast, that I think with the banning of Mana Crypt, sometimes it's just more likely that Rhystic Study is going to come on turn two rather than turn one. And when the draw engines come out on turn two, that's a lot of the times when a Rograk tech like this can win on turn two. So when you're tapped out for your draw engines, it's a much different thing because it means that the only things that you can draw have to be Force of Will by the time that they put more protection in play. Whereas if you can get the draw engine out on turn one and have open mana for them and they're playing into the Rhystic Study, it can be more difficult for them to win because you have more options like Spell Pierce and other counter spells that cost mana that you can cast. Just a relevant thing to think about now that Rhystic Study, Mana Crypt is banned, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I'm really taking advantage of that timing. How good do we think Rograk is? Where should we rank it?
I don't know. It's hard. I rank it about on par with Thassa's Oracle. Me personally, I know Thassa's Oracle is still like a better card. He's playing more decks. But I think when it comes to like the strongest thing you can do in the format, I think Rograk is there and I think Thassa's Oracle is there. So I think they're about the same.
So are they going to get tied? Or what
Rograk's better. Rograk. Yeah, what do you think?
What do I think? Yeah, this is what I think. I think Rograk kind of does have all of these different options and is like one of the best things that you can do in the format, but that's also like because it can play Thassa's Oracle in many of those, and like Thassa's Oracle being able to facilitate not just the good Rograk decks but also all of the other good like consultation decks and black strategies, I think that might edge it out.
I have one more thought about Rograk that we didn't mention. Holebreaker Horror lines and Cloudstone Curio lines.
Oh yeah,
the fact that Rograk Grograk makes those combos really easy also, I think is like a big bonus to it, because a lot of the other commanders that are partners that we talk about are Timna, Thrasios, and Krom, and they're really just there because they're a good card advantage, I think, and allow for us a lot of colors.
That's true. If you get yourself into a situation where you just have Grograk or Mox Amber in play and your Hullbreaker Horror, yeah, all you need to do is cast, you know, either or of those two cards
to start,
and
the
then
loop.
Yeah, you can make infinite red mana that way at
so,
least.
So I think that's an important thing to recognize also. But yeah, anyway. What did you end up saying? That Thassa's better?
I think that Thassa's Oracle is better, but okay. You think that Grograk is better?
I think that Grograk is better. Better is such a fucking hard word. But yeah, I think Grograk's better. I want to see it more. I think Grograk helps me win more games than Thassa's Oracle does. All I think the games that I win with Thassa's Oracle, I probably could have won with another way, with Underworld Breach and doing something else.
All right, well, I'm going to say that they tie.
Okay.
Only because sometimes there's a Dothi Voidwalker in play that you can't get rid of.
That's true.
So I'm going to say that Thassa's Oracle and Grograk are tied right now in first place.
I think that's great.
Cool. That means that they both get second place, though.
All right. That's the play-to-win way.
Yeah. What's your next card?
Dark Petition. I just talked about this one with Flare of Duplication.
Oh, yeah.
Dark Petition is for 3 black-black, so 5 mana total, a sorcery that says search your library for a card, then put that card into your hand, then shuffle. And it has Spell Mastery, which says if you have 2 or more instants and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, so 2 instants or 2 sorceries, or an instant and a sorcery, or more, add black-black-black to your mana pool also. So it is a Demonic Tutor and a Dark Ritual staple together if you can get the Spell Mastery on. The main reason I'm trying it out is because a lot of pilots right now on Rock'Sai are trying out Bolas of Citadel, and I have historically not loved Bolas of Citadel in CDH. I think there's too much interaction where other people, like you said with Dualcaster Mage, there's too many Force of Vigors types things that people can interact with. Ad Nauseam, they have to counter the Ad Nauseam. If they don't, I get to do the thing. That's what it does. So I want more stuff like that, and Dark Petition being just like an extra tutor. A lot of times it's going to feel just like Demonic Tutor if I can turn the Spell Mastery on, which with Grograk, that's pretty easy to do, to get 2 rituals or something in the graveyard. That's pretty simple. So then for 5 mana, you spend 5 mana, but you get 3 of it back. So really, it only costs 2 mana. And I also like it with Flare of Duplication that I alluded to before a little bit. Copying this one is fucking crazy. Yes, you need one other instant in your graveyard, but when Flare of Duplication resolves, it'll be in the graveyard, which means the copy of it will get the Spell Mastery on, and so will the other one. So even with just only one instant sorcery, if you Dark Petition, hold priority, Flare of Duplication, you get to do 6 mana, black mana, and 2 tutors, and the 6 black, you can just go get like Ad Nauseam Pact of Negation or Ad Nauseam and Ritual, because if these things resolve, your opponents don't have counterspells, so don't bother getting another counterspell.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like get a ritual or something. That's the ceiling. I'm 99% sure that's how it works, but that's the ceiling of this card. Yes, there's situations where you don't have this stuff and it's just a shitty tutor. That'll happen, but it's a card that I'm trying out a lot right now, and I like it more than Bolas of Citadel because it works right now. I need all my cards in that deck to like function immediately. The fact that Bolas of Citadel could maybe hit 2 lands, even though I'm only playing 24 or 23, that's too high of a risk.
No. The reason why I like it more as an action piece is because if you do have Spell Mastery, it just goes and gets Necropotence.
Yeah.
Because like even if you can't copy it, that 3 mana is just perfect to find Necropotence.
And
right,
it's a Necropotence
there.
Deck. Like that's what I'm doing. That's the main focus.
Right?
I have Born Upon the Wind, Valley Flood Caller, Final Fortune. Like that's the main. It's
exactly. And then that way, Dark Petition was literally just you went Demonic Tutor into Necropotence.
Right.
That's exactly what that set you up to do, and then you can win the game from there. So it does act like your next huge action piece that wins you the game that Bolas of Citadel is supposed to do, but like you can tutor for this one though a little bit better. Like you can't
I
really
have mystical tutor my deck.
Yeah,
not a mind
and like,
tutor.
And Bolas of Citadel forces you to play bad cards in your deck. Like Entomb's not a good card. You have Gamble. Yeah. Goblin Welder sucks in every scenario except to be something else you can sacrifice to your Flare of Duplication.
Yeah, in an Orcish Bowmaster world, playing a 1-1 and then passing my turn and say, I'll see you guys on turn 2, that just feels like not a plan I want to sink all my resources into.
No,
you know?
I feel like I want a second Entomb so I can get anger into my graveyard too. Like, I feel like I really need anger in order to do this well.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, either way, I think Dark Petition, I'm not positive if it's the next, you know, I'm not positive if it's incredible, but it's a card that I'm trying out right now and I'm having a ton of fun playing it, and I think I like it more than Bolas of Citadel personally.
Yeah, I think I do too. Yeah, it is definitely a better action piece. It doesn't lose you as much life to your Ad Nauseam too. I think that that I flipped over a
ring and Bolas of Citadel.
Yeah, that one life really mattered because then I couldn't play a fetch land and then like fetch for the duel that I needed. I needed to play a Gemstone Caverns that wasn't on.
Yeah.
So big, big poopy stinkers. and where do you want to rate Dark Petition?
I think it's better than Jolly Balloon Man. I think it's better than Reign of Filth. I'm not positive. I don't think it's better than... Oh, you know what? Is it better than Reign of Filth? I think... I'm not sure that it's better than Rain of Filth. I think it's around Rain of Filth.
You think it's around Rain of Filth? You're going to put Rain of Filth in your deck before Dark Petition?
Only because I'm testing both of them, and they're not cards that Rogside lists particularly play. So I think I just have to get more games in them before I get a full. Yeah. Right now, they seem like their ceiling is great. I could be wrong, and in a couple months, you know, or a couple weeks, just to say, these cards on paper seem great, but I actually don't love them. But for now, I can't rate them quite as high as Flare of Duplication, where I'm pretty positive Flare of Duplication is just like one of the best red cards that we've gotten in the last 5 years.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We haven't gotten one so good since
Dockside Extortionist.
Well, I guess we got Underworld Breach and D-SWAT at some point.
But after Dockside?
But still, like, Flare of Duplication's right up there.
So this Flare of Duplication is it better than Valley Floodcaller. I think Valley Floodcaller, Flare of Duplication, Rogside, Thassa's Oracle. I think out of the cards we've talked about so far,
they're all better than Dark Petition.
I think so. Only because I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Well, that means that Dark Petition is actually the third worst card that we've talked about so far.
If you look at it that way, sure. Yeah, I could look at it. It's like the fifth best card or something
that we have listed here.
How good is it if you phrase it from the top?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's the sixth best card.
It's the sixth best card we've talked about today. That's pretty good.
That's true. Yeah, yes, that's true. Okay.
All right.
Well, I have one more card.
Give it to me.
It's called Emergence Zone.
Oh, yeah.
I love instant speed wins now. This is a land that taps for colorless mana, but for a mana and tapping and sacrificing it, you can cast spells this turn as though they had flash.
Yeah, this one saw play for a while. I feel like I saw it less and less play. I really only specifically love it in crop rotation decks, I feel like.
Yes, I played it. I'm talking about it because recently in the Jund Rograk deck, I had a game where on turn one, I got to go Mox Amber and Bayou so that I could tutor for Culling the Week for my Rograk. And then on my turn two, Emergence Zone, float red mana, sacrifice my Rograk, so that I had 5 mana total, 4 black and a red. I could cast Necropotence and then still have enough mana with my Emergence Zone land for turn to crack that and then be able to use all the Necropotence cards that I get.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So it's really good at helping you set up like a turn 2 win because you need to use it as your land drop and it doesn't make color source of mana. A lot of the times you really don't want it on turn 1, which is its biggest downside because it's not like Ancient Tomb where it helps you pump out another artifact that helps you make mana. Even though it doesn't help you win on turn one, it helps you set up for turn two, which is your more common win turn anyway.
Yeah, I think turn two's got to be the goal. Turn one is still too, like, it can happen for sure, but I think turn two's got to be the goal.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that it's allowing you to do that even better than, like, Final Fortune allows you to do that, okay. I think, personally, and then, like, not lose the game immediately if you don't get there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been really high on Emergence Zone again. I've been, like, back and forth on it. I feel like I want this in more decks now, especially as I want to play more Necropotence, Valley Floodcaller, and
Born Wanna Win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, just winning in response to somebody else going for a win in like a slower deck, if that's what you're doing, I think can also be like a fine move if you are on any of the lines like the one that Chain of Smog.
Oh, Chain of Smog.
With
the
Blue Apprentice Chain of Smog. That's a good one that you can just cast those two spells and win at instant speed over top of somebody else. And I say that mainly because I think, like I said before, you want extra ways to find the land. You want the crop rotation to go get it and stuff like that. But if you are, I think this is a great card.
Yeah, that's true. Because crop rotation lets you still get it on someone else's turn if you don't have it in play, which I think is hugely important too.
Ever thought about Growth Spiral?
I have not because I was in Jund, so I haven't thought about it.
I've thought about this card a lot. I don't think that it's actually good.
But that's draw a card. You may play an additional land this turn. It's an instant speed explorer, right?
Yeah, draw a card for a blue and a green, an instant that says draw a card, and you put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield. It says nothing about tapped or untapped, which means untapped, which means Emergence Zone can activate right away.
That's pretty nice.
Ad nauseum for a bunch and you have the Emergence Zone in your hand and you're on somebody's end step and you know have a little extra mana for a Growth Spiral, put the Emergence Zone in and then crack the Emergence Zone and win. I don't know. I've thought about it a lot. I've never pulled the trigger on it. There just hasn't been a deck that's just been like a dedicated Necro deck that wants to play blue-green, I think.
Yeah,
if
that's
I could
the
find
problem.
Such a deck, maybe Food Chain Ukamon Kuzur.
Fukuma, is that what I just said? I think Food Chain Ukamon could do something like that. Maybe the popularity of Vile Smasher Thrasios would rise. Or if you, I guess you don't want to do Ikra Krom anymore because there's no Jewel Lotus. You're your commanders are never coming out.
Yeah.
But maybe a Thrasios Vile Smasher.
Maybe.
If you're leaning more towards Ad Nauseam, maybe that's something you could do.
So it's a lot of mana. I'm not sure that it's great. You have to have the Emergent Stone in your hand, or I guess you could have a Guy's Cradle and still have it act as like a ritual. If you like Ad Nauseam, you know what I mean? You already played your land and Guy's Cradle, you reveal it with the Ad Nauseam or something like that. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Either way, Emergent Stone, where do you rank it on this list? Do you think it's better than Jolly Balloon Man?
Yeah, do you think it's better more decks.
Do you think it's better than Orcish Lumberjack?
Yes, better than more decks.
Do you think it's better than Dark Petition?
No.
Oh, really?
I think
Emergence Zone.
I think they're both fringe. I think the Emergence Zone, they're both fringe enough. Yeah.
That it's what?
That it's a. That I guess that's probably better. Not true. That's probably my own bias. I think Dark Petition is better right now because I really like that card. But Emergence Zone is probably better. I think Emergence Zone sees play in like Kinnan, right?
Think historically Emergence Zone has been better than Dark Petition too.
Historically, for sure. Yes, you're right. So,
and
yeah, we'll
maybe even in the future too. Like
possibly
I think
maybe just only in my jaded mind is it not better.
All
than Dark
right,
Petition.
I'm gonna put Emergence Stone above because I think that's just a more tried and true card that like you could put it in any CEDH deck and I could excuse it being in that deck.
Let's hope that in 6 months I will say, haha, I was right. Dark Petition's
right.
Everywhere.
Yeah, but there's definitely going to be decks where like you can't just put Dark Petition in a deck and
no.
have it be good.
Yeah, it has to be very kind of dedicated, lots of rituals, Necropotence, that type of deck.
But is Emergent Stone better than Reign of Filth?
Yeah.
Okay, well then it definitely is better than Dark Petition then.
Yeah.
What about
only by the same logic though. I like both of those cards better than Emergence Zone right now, me personally.
Well, what about Valley Floodcaller? I think it's worse than Valley Floodcaller.
Oh, yeah. It's worse. It is a shitty Valley Floodcaller.
Yeah, it's just a little bit more clunky and awkward.
I think Valley Floodcaller is a better version of this card.
All right, what's your last card? Do you have one more card for me?
Last card, six.
Six?
Last card, six.
Nice, okay.
This is not a card that I've played a ton with, but I've seen played against me a lot, and it's been really good each time. Six is for two and a green, so for 3 mana total, a legendary creature tree folk that has reach. It's a 2/4, and it says, whenever six attacks, mill 3 cards. You may put a land card from among them into your hand. As long as it's your turn, non-land permanent cards in your graveyard have retrace, which means you can cast permanent cards from your graveyard by discarding a land in addition to paying their other costs. This card is kind of quietly just like a draw engine / Underworld Breach. It's not, obviously that's hyperbolic, but the fact that it draws you a land every turn that it connects, the 2/4 reach being a good blocker, that can be relevant sometimes, I guess.
Well, you don't really want to block with
not
it.
Not really,
because
no.
You're trying to hit those triggers, fuel up your graveyard with permanents that you can get back and retrace and find the lands in your deck to retrace.
Yeah,
too.
So, and it's nice that you can decide, is the land that I get going to be my land drop for turn if I need the extra land, or I have enough lands for turn, it's going to be the fuel that I need to retrace the Esper Sentinel that I just milled over, or the Wishclaw Talisman that I just milled over, or any of these other permanents would be really great to mill over. The only issue is you kind of have to be doing a little bit more of a slow thing, right?
Yeah, that's the kind of thing.
You don't want to be going super fast turbo with six, I don't think, because it just takes a little while to accumulate value. But I think the value that you accumulate, especially if you're doing graveyard stuff, if you're in the Gitrog Monster, if you're playing Tyum, if you're playing any of these decks that like to use the graveyard and are in green, I think six is really great.
I feel like it really wants to be in an Underworld Breach deck.
Yeah.
This is the only card that green gives Underworld Breach.
There's the one.
I guess Manamorphose too.
Manamorphose is nice. There is one card that is a regrowth that for 3 mana, but it has flashback for 5 mana that technically does make an intuition pile that replaces the Savine's Reclamation. It just requires a lot more mana that you can intuition for Underworld Breach, the regrowth with flashback and Lion's Eye Diamond.
I guess that's true.
And no matter what, you will be able to regrowth the Underworld Breach back. So that already does exist, but it's just like a very, very slow version of that. Six is just also helpful with the same strategy. You're right. I think that, but there's not a ton that green offers that strategy.
No, that's the thing. It's like those 3 cards probably.
Do you want to do slow Underworld Breach? Maybe. I don't know. I'm trying it out in Blood Pod, in my newest list of Blood Pod, just because I think besides Karmic Guide, the other two pieces, Kiki-Jiki and Felidar Guardian, I don't mind if they're actually in the graveyard. I can still go through the loop and reanimate them at a certain point. Usually, depending. I think it's going to be good in that deck, hopefully.
Yeah, maybe that's what Thrasios Vile Smasher becomes, is like slow Underworld Breach and you lean into like playing six and
Growth Spiral and six.
Yeah, those kind of cards.
Maybe. Yeah.
That'd be cool. Now we're cooking. Now okay. We're cooking.
Yeah. That sounds okay. Cool.
There we go. Where do you want to put six on this list?
I think it's better than Reign of Filth and Dark Petition. Although I like those cards personally more. Like I said right now, I think it is better than those two cards.
I think so too. Where do you have it versus Emergence Zone?
I think it about the same.
About the same. All right.
I like it more, but it's about the same, I think.
Okay. I think what we'll do is we'll have them also share a slot.
Yep.
Cool. All right, I like that. All right. And then that way we have eight slots because two of the slots are being shared by two different cards.
I have an extra card. I have a sixth one. Is that unfair? Can I mention one sixth card?
Why didn't you put six as your sixth card?
That would have made way more sense.
That would have made way more sense.
Just to be a little bit fun and quirky.
All right. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hit me with your extra card.
Demonic Council. This is just the last card that I want to talk about.
Oh, today. Yeah. This card.
We've talked about this one before in our set review. I thought it was good then. I still think it's going to be good. I haven't tried it even yet. Not even once, which is kind of strange that I'm talking about it now. But I just wanted to go over real quick because I think the card is strong. It's a 2-mana sorcery. Search your library for a demon card, reveal it, and put it into your hand, then shuffle with Delirium. If there are four or more card type among cards in your permanent in your graveyard, search your library for any card, put in your hand, then shuffle. It's an extra Demonic Tutor. If Delirium is on, that's the short end of it. It kind of reminds me of Infernal Tutor, and Infernal Tutor is not very good, but I think having Delirium is easier than getting Hellbent. It's great with Lion's Eye Diamond specifically, which is why I mentioned that, because you cast this, hold priority, sacrifice the Lion's Eye Diamond, turn Delirium on right away. I think with a lot of the newer versions of Rograk, it's very easy to turn on Delirium. At some point in your line, you normally have to sacrifice Rograk. That's just like part of what the deck does. So getting a creature in your graveyard that you can later exile to Underworld Breach is fine. The fetch land will put the land in there. And then as long as you get one or two sorceries or something like that, the rest of Delirium is, I think, pretty easy to turn on. I think Spell Mastery is easier to turn on. Having two instants or sorceries, I think, is easier than Delirium. But I think the Delirium is doable. It's a card that I'm going to put in by Vegas and I'm excited to try. So I don't know if that means by now, have I already been playing it or not, but it's a card I'm looking at. It's a card I'm thinking about.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how it does. I think it is a little bit better than I initially thought that it would be, but I'm still unsure how it is just because it's untested for me quite yet. So I'm a little bit curious to see how, you know, these next games in Vegas go so that way we can talk about them a little bit later on the podcast.
We'll do a recap when we get back from Vegas and we'll talk about it. Hopefully our 30 games.
Exactly. Fingers crossed. So I'm very excited about that. Are we ranking this?
Yeah.
It's an 11th card though.
Nah, I was late to the party. It's an honorable mention.
It's an honorable mention. Okay. Then do you want to hear the list then?
Top 10, please rattle them off.
All right. So at number 10 is the Jolly Balloon Man.
In Sisse, not as a commander.
Well, in general.
Yeah.
In the list.
In the list.
In the list. In this list, yeah. Okay. Orcish Lumberjack is our number 9. Our number 8 is Dark Petition. Number 7 is Reign of Filth. Number 6 is Emergence Zone and 6. And then number 4 is Valley Floodcaller.
Because we have no 5.
Because they were both in 1. And you get ranked down when you're both
There's
in 1.
There's only 10 no matter what.
Exactly, yeah. So our number 4 is Valley Floodcaller.
Right.
Our number 3 is Flare of Duplication. And then our number 2s are Thassa's Oracle and Rograk, Son of Rogah.
We've decided there are no winners today.
No one did one. They tied. Yeah. So there was no winner.
No winners. And it was a draw.
Unsatisfying. You should have hoped that we talked about better cards.
Thanks so much for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Your Boy Blue, Funko K, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groompy, Gecko21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Peter Stewart, Corner Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Go to 9, Quajay, Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to buy any of our merch, you can do that at PlayWinMTG.com.
Huge shout out to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Use code PlayWin5 at our affiliate link down below.
Follow us on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time. So much.
Connor Williams.
The $50 patrons.
Connor Williams, Roy Turner, Orjan, Mystic Muffin Man, Jacob Bauer, Tyler Watson, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H., Mulcraft, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Hobogos, Justin Mansolo, Jacob Debian, Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
I just also want to talk about cards that we think suck right now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
My top 3 is Necro Dominance, Into the Floodmaw, Orcish Bowmaster.
Oh, that's so funny, yeah. In Rog'Sai?
Yeah. Well, not even that they suck right. Into the Floodmaw just sucks because it can't bounce my Necro Dominance because my Necro Dominance sucks because I can't go through Underworld Breach lines with Necro Dominance out.
That makes sense. Orcish Bowmaster is just bad because it can't
help
you go fast.
Doesn't win the game at all.
Doesn't win the game. No. It's good if you're trying to grind, but grinding sucks. Go fast and win the game.
All right. That's it.
Good. tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the Board of Directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.